Anybody got a question?
Hey, my name is Carolyn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carolyn.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for coming. Here's my question. This has a little bit to do with singleness of purpose. And I'm not going to tell my story up here, but when I went into treatment, I was pretty broke up and hadn't surrendered and was very, very angry. And my chart was laying out on the nurse's desk, so I decided that I would lean over and peek at it and see how sick I was. And so I read on there that it said my diagnosis was animal drugs, opiate dependency, and then it had ETOH, alcohol. And I said, alcohol? You know, I guess I still wanted to think I could drink and still be okay. Of course, I got to a certain point when I was in treatment where I realized that I was never going to change if I didn't learn how to solve problems without changing the way I felt. So I hit the point of surrender and got this temporary sponsor who took me through the book, still not quite convinced that I was an alcoholic. I hadn't examined my drinking that thoroughly. I just know that alcohol combined with all of these other things is what brought me to a coma pretty much state and had to go to the hospital. So but by my temporary sponsor, who became my sponsor, she took me through the book, and we got to We Agnostics, and we read that definition of an alcoholic, and we started examining my drinking. And my drinking was completely alcoholic drinking, and I knew that. And, you know, so that delusion that I could drink like other people was smashed, and I knew at that point that I was an alcoholic. Now, for a couple of weeks, I was going this fellowship, that fellowship, this fellowship, that fellowship, and, you know, rapidly knew that the place for me was Alcoholics Anonymous. And so sometimes I will talk to people who don't realize that their problem in the beginning is alcohol. I will take them up to that part in We Agnostics. I want to know what your opinion is about that, because some people aren't quite ready to let go of the alcohol. They think that the other things are what brought them to their knees, and they still want to hang on to that alcohol, and that's where I was at. Now, I've got no delusion today that I can drink like a normal person, and I'm in the right place, but I was wondering, you know, how y'all felt about that. Because people come in the rooms and they start sharing that they're an alcoholic or they're an addict or I'm so-and-so and I'm addicted, you know, and they don't really give the respect to the program that they're in, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, and say, I'm so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor had 17 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she didn't know very much about the other things. But she did know about alcoholism, and she did show me pretty quickly that I drank like an alcoholic and knew I was where I was belong. You know, that was 6 years ago. So... The question specifically is, I think it's easy to run people off if they come in and think that they're just an addict before they get a chance to examine their drinking. Because I didn't get a DUI.
I understand that. That's a sponsorship deal. Lead up to the microphone.
I'm sorry. I forgot. I'm new at this. I forgot that... This is a sponsorship deal from start to finish, and that it's the sponsor's responsibility in these deals to qualify these guys and make sure that they understand that stuff. The atrocity in AA is that we let people get way off into the deal without ever really qualifying them. We assume a lot of things, and there's where we get into some trouble. And so it's unfortunate that anybody gets into this deal without understanding what their truth is. What was it that kicked your rear? I am a badly behaved alcoholic that knew I was an alcoholic from the time I was 19 years old. I did toe sacks full of crank, toe sacks full of the stuff. But I was not an addict. It did not kick me to the mat. And when it came time to quit, I could walk away clear from it. So what's my truth? I'm not an addict. I'm an alcoholic. But I needed to understand that on a gut level before I ever got into the stuff, into the work itself. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's our responsibility. That's what your sponsor did for you. She helped you see your truth. That's your responsibility for the newcomer. Help them see their truth. That's our
right.
job. We're teachers.
But I went around for 2 weeks getting out of treatment saying, you know, my name is Carol and I'm an addict.
That's true. A lot of our experiences.
And Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, not realizing that I drank.
It happened. You're lucky it was only 2 weeks and not 20 years. Because it could have been 20 years.
True. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Perfect.
Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Adam. I'm recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Adam.
Actually, I have two observations that I'd like you guys to comment on.
We need to get to a question as quick as we can, though.
Quickly.
Got it.
Speaking of taking people through the work rapidly, okay, I've worked with quite a few people, and I have experienced taking people through the work rapidly. They have a tendency to get a huge ego, a lot of arrogance, and sound like Chris in a meeting. Any suggestions on how to...
And that's a bad thing?
Maybe I should clarify.
Maybe you
sounding
should.
Like Chris at a workshop in a meeting. Any suggestions on how to alleviate that spiritual pride, that I got this shit and you guys don't know what you're doing kind of attitude? And the other quick observation is drug addicts, at least in my area, have a tendency to be terrified to go to Narcotics Anonymous for fear of dying. At least in my experience, what I've found I'm capable of doing is, part of it is knowing the people that I know. I can either direct them to somebody that's in Alcoholics Anonymous that has outside issues in that particular area to take them through the big book and then direct them to NA, or take them through myself. What are your thoughts on that?
Sometimes if I'm taking guys to the work, they're not allowed to talk at a meeting until they've gone halfway through amends. And they don't talk away the experience. And they learn a little bit about humility. And that kind of silences the ego a bit. And if they're still doing that, then maybe I need to address some other things with them. I haven't had too many experiences with that. But that's one thing I will do. I always encourage people I work with not to talk away the experience they're having. Because it can show up like that. Even if they're enthusiastic about what's going on, if the person seems to be doing that, they're silent until they clean up half of their amends. Get a guy, direct him to someone who's using drugs, who may be in here, has some knowledge about that stuff, and then tell them, take the book under their arm and go to that fellowship. They use a different text, but at least they can give some hope to others who are still suffering. And you know what? If it's uncomfortable for them, I hate to sound rough here, but tough. Because their responsibility is to go back to their home and pull another one out the way we got pulled out of this ditch. Chris just read something about a guy being stuck in a hole. Well, maybe there's a bunch of NA people dying looking for a solution. And so he or she has to go back there and catch resistance, like we do.
Yeah.
And when they get resentments, they come home and write nightly inventory and go back the next day. Right? See, the idea is that I'm going into this fellowship all alone. Well, then maybe they missed something in the work and they didn't really have an experience. Because if they had an experience, they know they're going in with their Heavenly Father. They're walking into a sorted spot. They're sitting down, presenting a message. And little by slowly, they'll pull someone out. With a whole lot of resistance, but they'll pull someone out. I forget who I was speaking to earlier. I was in Dallas about a year ago, and I attended a CA meeting. These guys were on fire. Using this text. It's not happening back here. But these guys, and somebody went in there, and whatever they did, they ignited a flame. I sat in a meeting that I could not believe the amount of excitement, enthusiasm, and passion in people who were wide awake in a CA meeting. Better than some of our AA meetings as far as experience goes, experientially where they were. So we sent them in there. Go there with them for support.
Good stuff.
Yes, sir.
My name is Jim, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
I go to a lot of meetings in my area. Unfortunately, most of them are what I call open, disgusting meetings. And war stories up in my area have evolved from how bad it used to be to telling you my experience so that you can identify through the feelings you have. I must be getting dense in my old age, but I'm having trouble identifying through my feelings. Is there anything I could, or you could recommend that I do to combat this kind of thing?
Let me answer something real quick on that. Jim,
microphone, Mark.
At any stage of the game in this thing, we have a choice of whether we're going to be a part of the solution or part of the problem. And if I see something in a meeting that's where things are going south and things are getting crazy, I can either choose to stop it, change it, or just go along with it. And so if you see in – somebody said one time, I said, Myers, I think you hate discussion meetings more than any man I ever saw. And they may be right. I don't like them. I think they've harmed our fellowship immensely. But I won't sweep every discussion meeting under the rug as of just a crappy meeting. With the right kind of people in there, in chairmanship positions, those meetings can be highly effective and they can be okay. And so my suggestion would be is that if you're in those situations and you see those meetings getting convoluted and bizarre, stop them at your group conscience level, say something, see if you can get some good, strong sponsors up there, some good, strong people in the program to chair those meetings to keep things back on track. And you'll get things back where they're supposed to be. But it's real easy. We have this illusion that groups are formed and then they stay healthy because they're an AA group. It's like this thing, because there's a circle and triangle on the door, God's there. I've come to figure over the years that I think God's got better things to do than sit in a sick meeting where a bunch of ego and arrogance is flying rampant. Mm-hmm. I think he'd probably rather be out fishing someplace. You see? Groups can get real sick, and you can get sick right along with them. So just be alert, be prayerful about the situation, and then make the changes through on a group conscience level and see what happens.
You're blind. Good stuff. Anybody? Charlie?
Charlie. My name's Charlie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Charlie.
I don't really have a question. I just wanted to stand up at the podium. I'm just grateful for your passion and your enthusiasm and your honesty up here. And I feel blessed to know each one of you guys, which is also why I can't call you my heroes. But Chris, you mentioned earlier about a group, you know, quoting from the text, that the AA group is a spiritual entity. And that just sunk home with me, and I was thinking about that, and I was taught to take these statements and turn them into questions, and I got to ask myself, is my home group a spiritual entity?
Mm.
Or is it just a group of like-minded individuals with strong egos pulling someone in the same direction? And keep that in mind about my question, because I found my truth in the literature, like you guys were talking about, and then I went to literature-based meetings, Big Book meetings, and I was surrounded by like-minded individuals sharing eloquently about the Big Book and Munisha from the Big Book about Ebby and Bill and Roland all coming from Vermont. And, you know, little trivia bits from the Big Book, and we were, you know, can you top this, and going around in a circle sharing more and more eloquently about this text, and I didn't feel that I was carrying the message. I felt I was just spitting stuff back and trying to sound good. And so when I branched out into other types of meetings, and the question is, trying to carry this message and trying to go out into the trenches, as you call it, and trying to keep in mind that spiritual entity, what format do you guys feel is the most effective way to do business, you know, in our group format? And almost a follow-up to this other question. And again, thanks for being here, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks,
Charlie. I still believe that literature-based meetings are the way to go. You have less chance of getting off out in therapy land, in pissing and moaning land, in war story land, if you have a literature-based meeting and a topic that comes out of that book. So many of y'all have alluded to it. I have to repeat myself. I don't want to paint a picture up here, and I hope we haven't, that what we're going to have to do is go back in and battle our meetings. I mean, group consciences, these meetings are there. There's some great meetings out there. I mean, gee whiz. I mean, it's like Adam was saying, you know, you got a little guy that's 20 days, you know, sober, 30 days sober, and he's working through the steps, and he goes into a meeting and tells everybody that they're doing it wrong. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in those rooms that are sober. Y'all follow what I'm saying? Why go in there and lead like that? We're not trying to stir up a bunch of stuff. Share your hope about the topic being presented, and somebody will gravitate to that message. And as long as you're sharing that way, the message is so powerful that you're bound to affect another alcoholic. And when people know that they can call on you and get a positive, a solution-filled answer to the topic, what's being discussed, they'll call on you. You'll find your place in these meetings. We don't go into meetings looking for fights. And if your format is based on open discussion, where it starts with who's got the problem, you are absolutely leading with your chin. Well, what do you think's going to happen? I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's going to turn into a pissing and moaning meeting, and you're going to leave disgusted with no solution. Make sense? We've got to talk about a step, talk about a paragraph, talk about a line, talk, you know, I mean, there's so much to talk about in that book about so many different things. You could never get bored doing it. I mean, that's where I would go with it. Charlie? Yeah. Anybody else? Y'all are fried pies. Yeah. Y'all want to circle up and pray? How's that?
Did you have anything else you needed to cover?
No. Let's have another hand for our speakers this weekend. Thanks for coming and giving of your time to us all.